This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
And coming up right now is The Space Show. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this week's The Space Show, Budget 2024, the old, the disappeared, and the new. And just what is Landsat next? We have a few spillovers from last week's program about the Australian-Indian cooperation. First up, we have budget space news.
I received a message from His Excellency the Governor-General recommending, in accordance with Section 56 of the Constitution, an appropriation for the purposes of the Appropriation Bill No. 1, 2024-2025. Call the Treasurer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I present the Appropriation Bill No. 1, 2024-25 and the Explanatory Memorandum.
And I call the Treasurer.
Yeah. Thank you, Speaker. I move that the bill be now read a second time.
And he did too. That was the Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, in Parliament yesterday evening, just a little under 24 hours ago. Listen as carefully as you might, he made no reference to space or astronomy. So the Space Show has scoured the hundreds of pages of the budget papers to find out what the government proposes. And we must say that compared to the past few years, the pickings are rather bare, with one standout exception. So first, the regulars. Under the heading Reprofiled Spending, it was announced in the budget that they would address the funding needs for the Square Kilometre Array project. Now, previously, $92 million had been committed to build this radio telescope in Western Australia. That funding would occur and cover the years from 2024 to 2027. The reprofiling is mostly due to increases in construction costs at the telescope site. So it forms a part of Australia's total commitment to the Square Kilometre Array project, which is $643 million over 10 years from 2021. Now, exactly what the rescoping involves was not spelled out in the budget announcement. The budget, as had been the case for many years, sets aside a contingency fund to cover the government's liability for damages caused by space and certain high-power rocket activities. This is a United Nations requirement. The liability is capped at $3 billion above an insured level. Additionally, people who launch high-powered rockets are required to take financial responsibility to a maximum of $100 million. Now, on to the hidden. Defence spending on space activities is buried in the overall defence budget allocation, and we can find no specific reference to it. Likewise, funding for the Australian Space Agency has disappeared from the budget papers and presumably, I say presumably, is buried within the Department of Industry, Science and Technology. However, this surprises us since it has appeared in the budget papers since the inception of the agency. So, don't know what's happening to the Space Agency, but it's not listed as a separate item. Well, now on to the new resources, the new expenditures. A Resourcing Australia's Prosperity Program to enable Geoscience Australia to map the whole of onshore Australia by 2060 and deliver high quality and information. This will involve $566.1 million over 10 years from 2024 to 2025. Now, this is, according to Madeline King, the Minister for Resources, a generational sustainable investment. To be run by Geoscience Australia, the program will, over 35 years, at a national scale and through deep dives, progressively map Australia's highly prospective regions, critical minerals, groundwater, and resources needed for the transition to net zero. Now, it strikes us here at the Space Show that Fleet Space Technologies of Adelaide will likely be putting their hand up to help out here with their exosphere geodes. We describe them in our April 17 program, which is available at space.southernfm.com.au. And once you get there, you follow the link to our 2024 programs and you'll find it there listed for April the, what did I say? The 17th, I think I said. Right. Now, to the final noteworthy space budget item. A partnership with the United States Geological Survey in the Landsat NEXT satellite project. The expenditure of $207.4 million over 5 years from 2023 to 2024 and then $38.2 million per year ongoing will secure access to high-quality land imaging data to inform mining, agriculture and emergency response. Interestingly, Madeleine King, the Minister for Resources, has issued a media release which appears to quote different figures for the Landsat NEXT satellite project. She says that $448.7 million will be spent over 11 years from 2023 at an average of $43.2 million per year ongoing from 2034. The Geoscience Australia will continue to release or continue to receive data in Alice Springs as it has done since 1979. Well, we have here a little feature, quite a long feature actually, about the next generation of Landsat satellites. The trio satellites to be called Landsat NEXT. This feature comes courtesy of the Goddard Space Flight Centre.
A desert river, its verdant banks bursting with new vegetation. A sea of sand dunes, blanketed with fresh snow. A mountain, its sides dazzling with the arrival of autumn's foliage. Images that not only capture the imagination, but, more importantly, tell a story. A story of our planet's surface, ever-evolving, a patchwork of rivers, mountains, deserts, oceans, farmlands, and cities. A story told over the course of days, months, years, and decades, all thanks to the Landsat program.
Landsat actually was one of the things that first got me involved in remote sensing. Landsat provided that global perspective, but still at the management scale resolutions, plot level, field scale, but also provide that sort of whole Earth scale resolution, and that was pretty exciting.
For over 50 years, Landsat has watched over Earth, giving us critical insights into the way our planet is changing with us and around us. Now, 8 satellites later, it's time for this story's next chapter. Landsat, next. The next phase in the longest space-based record of Earth's land surface will provide a host of new capabilities for the next generation of Landsat data users, including enhanced spatial resolution and 15 new spectral bands. But the most remarkable feature of this new mission, while previous Landsat missions have all featured one satellite, Landsat Next will be a trio, a constellation of 3 observatories circling the globe in unison.
Even before the launch of the last Landsat, the user community was actually being queried about what was their needs for the next Landsat. One of the things that came back was all the users said higher temporal revisit was the highest thing that people were looking for. And the way you get higher temporal revisit is you either have a wider swath so that you have a wider field of view, or you have more satellites that are viewing a larger portion of the Earth all the time.
We came up with this approach that utilizes 3 smaller observatories to meet that temporal revisit and incorporates those spatial resolution improvements at each observatory while maintaining the full spectral capability across each observatory.
This new triplet configuration will greatly improve the temporal revisit time from 16 days with Landsat 9 down to just 6 days. Landsat Next will give scientists and data users a more precise view of how a scene changes over time. This can help highlight key stages of plant growth and is useful for crop management and estimating yield.
One of the criteria actually we use to assess just even types of cover is based on when the crops emerge, when they might be harvested, but also being able to look at different insect outbreaks, look at different effects of drought. All this stuff can happen very fast, and so being able to respond quickly, this is an important aspect of being able to have this higher temporal revisit.
Throughout the program's history, Landsat satellites have been able to chronicle the surface of our planet in stunning detail. Landsat Next will look to push that capability even further. To understand the resolution of Landsat, we need to zoom all the way in until we see individual pixels. Each pixel of a Landsat 8 or 9 scene is about 30 square meters. Landsat Next looks to improve this to 10 meters, roughly 9 times the resolution, allowing us to pinpoint finer details within the image.
This is fantastic. So now we'll be actually picking up about 40% more agricultural fields that we totally missed before, and that's just in the U.S. alone. So some of these smaller agricultural fields, windrows, crevasses, and ice fields, those will be picked up in new Landsat data.
This enhanced spatial resolution won't be limited to just visible light. Thermal bands will also be getting an upgrade from 100 meters to 60 meters, a resolution dimension slightly larger than the bottom of the Statue of Liberty's pedestal. Urban areas like New York City are prone to suffering from a phenomenon called the heat island effect, as an excess of impervious surfaces absorb and re-emit the sun's heat. Using Landsat Next's improved thermal resolution, scientists and data users will have the ability to map the temperature of urban areas in finer detail, possibly shedding light on better methods of sustainable urban development. Landsat imagery is well known for the vivid detail it provides of the Earth's surface, but Landsat satellites are actually collecting data from across the spectrum, starting with 4 spectral bands with Landsats 1 through 3, up to 11 bands with Landsats 8 and 9, from visible to thermal infrared. Landsat Next looks to push the program's spectral capabilities even further, boasting an additional 15 spectral bands, bringing the total to a whopping 26. With more than double the spectral bands of Landsats 8 and 9, users will be able to glean even more information from Landsat Next data, allowing for better resource management, such as tracking water quality and detecting harmful algal blooms.
Coastal waterways, we're experiencing algal blooms like never before. Those are health concerns for our population. Being able to detect those and respond to them quickly, you know, that temporal revisit and those new bands enable us to do that.
The other thing is actually being able to better track dynamics of snow and ice. The melting snow and ice are used to recharge water sources, especially in the western U.S. So being able to know when those resources are going to be available, determining potential for flooding versus recharge is very important for water management.
It's often said that Landsat's superpower is time travel, granting its users the ability to rewind the clock and observe the evolution of our planet's surface during the last half century. But the true key to unlocking Landsat's ability to travel in time has been the remarkable consistency in data quality across multiple decades and Landsat missions.
It's more than that, actually. It's a time machine, but it's also a time and space machine, I would argue. It's not only being able to look back into time, I think it's also being able to look at different places on the globe and give you a consistent picture anywhere on the globe as well. And that's what Landsat allows us to do. There's a consistency in the measurements. There's consistency in the way the instruments were calibrated. The reason why this is so important is that changes on Earth, whether they be changes in vegetation or subtle changes on the Earth's surfaces, that we want to make sure that we're actually capturing these changes and they aren't just changes in the instruments themselves.
Landsat has been historically the gold standard reference for calibration of many different missions across the whole globe. The radiometric quality for Landsat Next will be at least as good as any previous Landsat, so we will maintain that standard for calibration and referencing for all missions.
Landsat Next's three satellites, improved six-day temporal revisit, enhanced spatial resolution, and 26 spectral bands all add up to a massive amount of data. Landsats 8 and 9 each record around 750 scenes per day. With Landsat Next's trio of satellites, that number will skyrocket to over 2,200 scenes per day. More scenes means more data.
This will be a huge increase in data volume. This means we're not going to be downloading data anymore. Get ready to be doing all your data processing in the cloud.
Mission data volume and management is our number one challenge on Landsat Next. Once we get that data to the ground, our partners at USGS, who operate the ground network and ground systems, they can handle that transmission and then publish it and provide it to the cloud for all these users to have free and open access to this data. I can't stress enough how exciting that is for any small university to be able to sign up and tap into that data.
It's still early days for the Landsat Next mission. Slated for launch in late 2030, there's no shortage of work to be done over the next 7 years. But plans for the new triplet constellation, upgraded spatial and temporal resolutions, and added spectral bands have the Landsat Next team excited.
Our mission right now is really a quantum step forward from previous Landsats. This may be the biggest leap in capabilities since the launch of Landsat 7. And when we launch in 2030, it'll be the biggest improvement in 30 years. I'm very, very excited. I can't wait to see what comes out of all of these emerging applications and how well it supports the user.
Over the life of the Landsat program, the world's population has more than doubled, leading to increasing pressure on precious resources, such as food and water. But time and time again, Landsat missions have only served to highlight humankind's innate ability to adapt to its environments, enabling us to develop better methods of sustainable resource management. By helping farmers to monitor the health of their crops and efficiently manage their water resources, by guiding forestry management programs on better ways to identify areas at risk for wildfires and track changes in land use over time, or by contributing to conservation efforts, monitoring and assessing the biodiversity of coastal wetlands and protected areas. Landsat Next will look to not only preserve this over 50-year legacy, but bring it into the future.
We live on this planet Earth. We all know that we want to leave this planet for our children. We know the importance of sustainability, and I think that's what Landsat's all about. It's about helping us manage the planet that we live on for the long term, and that's why it's there, and that's why it continues to be here and expected to be there for the next generation as well.
And just exactly what Australia's involvement in Landsat Next was not announced by the Minister of Resources. Perhaps we'll get details in a few in the coming days.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
On last week's The Space Show, we reported that the Australian Federal Government has awarded funding totalling $18 million for three cooperative projects between Australia and India. And we ran out of time to bring you three comments, so here they are. First, in making the funding announcement, Ed Husic, the Minister for Industry and Science, was quoted as saying,
"Australia and India are enduring strategic partners, and by working together in space, we can strengthen our relationship while also delivering outcomes that will benefit our nations and region more broadly. These projects emphasize the role space science can play in enhancing cooperation in our region for mutual benefit. The innovations that will be developed as part of these projects are going to help address some of our greatest challenges of today, like climate change, while also driving gains in areas like advanced manufacturing and artificial intelligence that will promote a future made in Australia."
The Chief Executive Officer of the Australia-India Institute, Lisa Singh, issued this statement.
"In an increasingly interconnected world, the collaboration between India and Australia in space not only strengthens bilateral ties but also reinforces the importance of international partnerships in driving innovation and progress. Australia and India possess significant untapped potential as space partners. As they become closer economic and security partners, the areas for cooperation on space technologies will grow. The success of Chandrayaan 3 shows India is dedicated to advancing its space and cutting-edge technology capabilities, and it's an exciting time to explore greater opportunities to partner with them."
Over in Adelaide, the head of the Australian Space Agency, Enrico Palermo, offered this quote.
"India's commercial space sector is rapidly growing, propelled forward by historic feats like becoming the first nation to successfully land on the South Pole of the Moon. By investing in these collaborative projects, we can further strengthen the relationship between our space sectors and unlock opportunities for Australian organisations to develop even more joint projects and missions with India into the future. Australia has unique competitive advantages to offer in Earth observation, communications technologies and services, and robotics and automation. We also have the capacity to contribute to and learn from India's human spaceflight ambitions, particularly in space health and life sciences."
And by the way, Chandrayaan-3 did not land on the south pole of the moon. It landed 600 kilometres away at latitude 70 degrees south. It's not on the south pole, as you heard there.
88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Over the past few months, we have been tracking the fortunes of the Optimus satellite that was launched in March, actually on March the 4th. Unfortunately, it appears to have been lost. Well, the day after the Optimus launch, Valiant made this announcement from its Brisbane offices.
Valiant Space announced today the launch of its first propulsion system to space, after successfully delivering the hardware to its customer Space Machines Company. The system, which utilizes Valiant's VS-1 thruster, flew to space on a SpaceX Falcon 9 and will be performing numerous orbit-changing maneuvers for Space Machines Company's mission. It is the first Australian bipropellant propulsion system to fly to space, on board the largest Australian spacecraft ever to launch. Valiant was selected by Space Machines Company in 2022 July to provide its propulsion system to maneuver the Optimus spacecraft.
This has been an incredible opportunity to demonstrate an Australian first capability on such a large scale,
said CEO and co-founder of Valiant, Andrew Usinski.
We are excited to have delivered this system to the Space Machines team, and look forward to together demonstrating Valiant's propulsion technologies in orbit.
The supply contract culminated in the completion of a rigorous qualification and acceptance testing campaign towards the end of 2023. As part of this testing, Valiant achieved numerous milestones with its VS-1 thruster, successfully firing multiple 45-second burns.
Being able to fire our thrusters for long continuous burns reduces large orbital maneuvers to just one operation,
said Mr. Usinski.
Ultimately, this saves our customers time and money by getting their satellite assets into the right orbit quickly.
Included on the launch are multiple of Valiant's coaxial solenoid valves, which the company is now exporting internationally.
We have now executed and shipped multiple supply orders for our valves to customers across the globe, and have many more under production,
Valiant's chief technical officer, Michael Dow, stated.
There's a real demand for dependable space propulsion products, both at a component level and a system level. Valiant is bringing these solutions to the market.
The delivery to SMC comes off the back of a successful seed round raised by the company in 2023 June. The round has enabled Valiant to grow its team and bring to market its range of space propulsion products, including valves, thrusters, and full propulsion systems. Many of these products and components are included on the SMC mission and will help to build Valiant's flight heritage.
This mission will see us put our propulsion system and all of its subcomponents through their paces. The mission will demonstrate our VS-1 thruster as well as the control and feed system components that have been manufactured right here in our Brisbane facility. Along with the SMC team and their partners, this will be a truly impressive all-Australian mission,
said Mr. Usinski. Space Machines Company Chief Executive Officer, Rajat Kulshas THA, said,
We are very pleased to be utilizing Valiant Space's propulsion system for our inaugural mission of Optimus, Australia's largest spacecraft to date. This partnership is a positive step for both of us, and for the Australian space industry.
The development of the launched propulsion system has been supported by the Australian Space Agency's Moon to Mars Supply Chain Capability Grant Program.
On March the 5th, Valiant Space announced it had been awarded a supply chain grant.
Valiant Space has been awarded $1.77 million in supply chain grants, administered by the Australian Space Agency as part of the Australian Government's Moon to Mars initiative. Two separate projects are being supported under the grants, with focus on expanding both Valiant's thruster and its solenoid valve capabilities.
We are very thankful to receive this support for these projects by the Australian Government,
said Valiant Space CEO, Andrew Usinski.
As the quantity of satellites in space continues to rise, the need for in-space maneuverability grows with it. These projects will position Valiant to be a significant player in the supply chain for propulsion technologies.
As part of the first grant it has been awarded, Valiant Space will mature its expanded line of non-toxic thrusters, designed to support space missions from CubeSat to interplanetary spacecraft. This will see the establishment of new thruster testing capabilities to ensure full qualification of this expanded product line. The second grant will support the company to address the growing space supply chain demand for reliable and high-quality fluid control components. In particular, the project will see the expansion of design tailoring, advanced manufacturing, and qualification capabilities for the company's coaxial solenoid valve products. This will culminate in a wide range of space-qualified fluid control solutions that meet customers' supply chain needs, for use in both domestic and international space missions.
Over the past 12 months, we have been actively exporting our coaxial solenoid valves to various customers in Europe and the USA,
said Michael Dow, Valiant Space's chief technical officer.
These grant projects will enable us to provide coaxial solenoid valves that suit more customer applications, such as different propellant compatibilities, pressure ranges, and flow rates.
Best things in a lab are free, but you can give it to the birds and bees. I need money. Oh, that's what I want. Yeah, I want my money. That's what I want. Money. Hey, that's what I want. I want my money. That's what I want.
And we've been talking about the Optimus satellite, which was launched, but never heard from again, apparently. Now, ANT61 is a privately held company based in Everleigh, New South Wales. It was founded in 2021. They develop autonomous robots to avoid putting human lives at risk. They use artificial intelligence-based control systems that enable their robots to perform various installation tasks in unpredictable environments where remote control is impossible, which leads them to clamber aboard the Optimus satellite.
Every year, scores of multitone satellites become space debris because a tiny component, like a battery, breaks down. ANT61's brain offers a solution. ANT61's upcoming mission will demonstrate how our nimble robot can quickly and safely replace a broken part in another satellite in orbit. Today, March the 4th, our space hardware product, ANT61 Brain, has been successfully deployed by SpaceX on board the space machine's company Optimus One spacecraft. The Brain is the world's first space-grade neuromorphic computer. In the past, we used general processing units and TP units for machine learning, but the neuromorphic technology pioneered by BrainChip is up to 5 times more energy efficient. That's why we chose it for our computer that will analyze footage from engineering cameras, detecting anomalies in spacecraft operation. The Brain will only be turned on later in the Optimus One mission, so stay tuned for future updates on the operation.
Now, ANT61 has ambitions beyond assisting satellites orbiting the Earth. They think their technology could be used in the craters of the Moon and even at the bottom of methane lakes on Saturn's moon Titan.
We have the great ambition to become the integral part in enabling research and industrialization of Moon and Mars, yet currently we are focused on delivering value through innovation here on Earth.
The final Australian technology being tested on the Optimus satellite that was placed into orbit on March the 4th is printed flexible solar cells. On the day after the launch of Optimus, CSIRO, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, released this statement.
State-of-the-art printed flexible solar cell technology developed by Australia's National Science Agency, CSIRO, was successfully launched into space today aboard Australia's largest private satellite, Optimus One, on SpaceX's Transporter 10 mission. CSIRO is exploring the potential of printed flexible solar cells as a reliable energy source for future space endeavours, in collaboration with Australian space transportation provider, Space Machines Company. CSIRO Space Programme Director Dr. Kimberly Clayfield said a major challenge in the development of spacecraft is low-mass, high-efficiency power systems. He said,
CSIRO's printed flexible solar cells could provide a reliable, lightweight energy solution for future space operations and exploration. If the space flight test reveals similar performance as we've shown in the lab, This technology offers significant advantages over traditional silicon-based solar. Yet another example of Xyro's terrestrial expertise being applied to solve challenges in the space domain.
Xyro Renewable Energy Systems Group leader Dr. Anthony Chesman said 8 mini-modules of CSIRO's Australian-made printed flexible solar cells were attached to the surface of Space Machine Company's Optimus 1 satellite. He said,
Xyro researchers have been working for many years to improve our solar cell performance using perovskite, an advanced material that is highly efficient in converting sunlight into energy. Our perovskite cells have been achieving incredible outcomes on Earth, and we're excited that they'll soon be showcasing their potential in space.
Rajat Kulsh is THA, Space Machines Company Chief Executive Officer, said, Xyro's innovative flexible solar cells will transform spacecraft power systems and enable new possibilities for future space missions. We're thrilled to integrate this groundbreaking technology into Optimus. This is just the beginning, and I'm excited to see what the future holds as we continue to innovate. Dr. Chesman said in situ testing would secure information on the performance of the perovskite cells as they orbit the planet.
We will get information on how the panels are holding up under the extreme conditions in space and data on the efficiency they achieve.
Dr. Chesman said the team had already undertaken pioneering research on the likely performance of the cells in a space environment.
Based on our research, we expect our printed flexible solar cells will stand up to the effects of cosmic electron and gamma radiation, which can compromise the performance and integrity of traditional solar cells. We are also confident these cells will outperform traditional cells in cases where sunlight hits them at non-optimal angles. The feedback we receive from the satellite will provide valuable insights into the practical application of our technology and inform future technology development.
Dr. Chesman highlighted the unique opportunity the solar technology could present for Australian manufacturing.
This is a great opportunity for Australian technology to contribute to global space exploration. We are eager to collaborate with potential partners to explore this further,
he said.
As we noted, the Optimus satellite appears to have failed, although they are still trying to contact it. And, well, they might succeed. Well, I'm Andrew Rennie. This has been The Space Show.